Hey everyone, Raven here with another episode of Plants Save My Life. This week, I sit down with Jamie London Wolberg, who shares his story of how plant medicine helped him not only through his gender transition, but they also provided profound relief when Lyme disease left him bedridden and disabled. Now, Jamie is a plant-based healer, a spiritual wellness guide, and an intuitive chef. So today, we'll be talking about his personal experience as one of the first medical cannabis patients of New York, as well as how cannabis and mushrooms both helped him in his own healing journey. So join me as we welcome Jamie to the show.
Also, a quick disclaimer, while I make every effort to broadcast correct information, I myself am still learning. I promise to double-check all my facts, but I realize that plant medicine is a constantly changing science and art. So the views and opinions expressed on this show are intended purely for educational and informative purposes. No topics are intended to be construed as medical advice.
Awesome. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining Plant Save My Life today. I'm very excited for our conversation that we're going to share, and I appreciate you coming on. I would love to hear how plants have saved your life, just if you don't mind introducing yourself for the listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Namaste, everyone. My name is Jamie London Wolberg. My pronouns are he, they. I am a plant-powered healer, spiritual wellness coach, and intuitive chef. Plants have completely and continue to save my life, plants and fungi. I am someone who lives with many, many different diagnoses of health issues that all stem from autoimmune and chronic illness. And without cannabis and fungi, I honestly don't think I would be here. I don't think I would have gotten through my gender transition to the degree that I have, or that I would even feel well enough or joy or open my mind enough to possibility that would want to keep me around. And I'm beyond grateful that this all exists with us and that we have such a symbiosis with these medicines.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I'm right there with you. I feel that we have such a symbiosis. We have such synergy with them. I kind of believe that we co-evolved with them to a certain degree. And it's nice to know that, like, not only are they able to help you in your healing kind of like pharmacologically and medicinally, but also like spiritually and able to help you emotionally as well. And I'd love to hear more about, you mentioned that there's an autoimmune diagnosis.
Yes. So I have, I think now 11 or 12 technically different diagnoses. And cannabis has helped me. This is actually the first time I'm publicly talking about this. But I am planning on doing something big with this, is that cannabis has helped me to cure and manage atrophy. So this is genital atrophy. So being that I was assigned female at birth, I have different genitalia. So we're talking about vaginal atrophy. And cannabis literally has helped me within months to cure something that couldn't be understood. Now, I'm speaking not as a medical professional, but as a person who has experienced this and went from being diagnosed to something to being told from a medical provider, you do not have this anymore. But everything else has been stemming from when I was 21. I had a really bad case of Lyme's disease.
Ugh, that's so scary.
Yeah, it's honestly, it was truly terrifying. When I was 4 and a half, I almost died of pneumonia and I was hospitalized for 10 days. Since that point, I had never been that sick and that scared. But the former really impacted my immune system. And although Lyme's disease is not considered, I guess, technically autoimmune, I question that all the time because it directly impacts the autoimmune system and sort of sets you up to like every. It's almost like if I imagine a cartoon in my mind of just like all of these different evil cells and germs being like lunch, you know, just because your body is set up for that vulnerable state. And so what I've been told now is that I have what is called, it's a connective tissue disease. So it's an undifferentiated diagnosed connective tissue disease, and it's a mouthful. And that basically just means that, in a nutshell, we know that you have an autoimmune, but we don't really know what to call it because we can't prove it's lupus, which is what we keep thinking it is. and you clearly have all these symptoms, but then your bloods are like totally normal. And we agree that we believe you, essentially, is what is happening. And it's like when you Google this connective tissue disease and you like, it literally is kind of like, yeah, we are saying that we agree you have an autoimmune, and like it, this is a vague kind of diagnosis that it has something to do with the tissues in some way, probably.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So we're still at the cusp.
Right. It's still very early, and it's kind of like when they put their hands up and they know that they need to put a diagnosis, because that's the Western world, right? So outside of that, I have things like gastroparesis, which is a rare stomach condition. I have fibromyalgia, which is another one of those, I believe, is an autoimmune disease that they're claiming is not. I have persistent postural perceptual dizziness, which is a newer diagnosis coined in 2017 by the Mayo Clinic in collaboration with UCLA. And UCLA was where they were able to diagnose me. The Mayo Clinic denied me, actually. They told me that they wouldn't be able to diagnose me. And then they coined this off of, it was initially just kind of everything lumped into a lot of these different vagus conditions that already exist. So they were saying that I had a neuronitis kind of situation. And so they just got even more specific. The list goes on. I have nasal vagal feigning. I have Raynaud's, syndrome. Raynaud's is actually autoimmune. yeah, it's a long list. And why I don't get into the list a lot anymore, like even though I'm realizing now as I'm telling you this, that there is power actually in talking about this because of how much the Western world still cares about diagnosis. It's because the diagnosis is not what impacts, being given the diagnosis is not what impacts me every day.
Absolutely.
That's got nothing to do with how I go about my life. It only has to do with paperwork and how I'm legally disabled and all of that stuff. And it has nothing to do with it. It's all about the symptoms, and it's all about the results of what helps. And it's about loss, and it's about gain, and ultimately it's about life and death. And that's the difference that the plants make, is they make it possible to conceive of something outside of just death when you are surrounded by uncertainty and feeling like death all the time.
Yeah, well said. Well said. I think that whenever you're mentioning that there's a, you know, a laundry list of diagnoses that come with it, like you kind of said, it's not necessarily the diagnosis as it is the group of symptoms that come along with it. But also there's that huge uncertainty of medical professionals essentially putting their hands up, you know, and not understanding what's really going on there on multiple different degrees. And I would love to hear more about the symptoms you yourself experience and how plant medicine has kind of helped work you through that journey of self-discovery and healing.
Oh, I love that question. To me, this is like the meat and potatoes. If like, in terms of when I'm talking, when patients hear my story, I know that hearing my story and whatever and the emotions, and that's important too. It's super, super important to have that EQ and for them to feel seen and heard within my story is valuable. Yes, 100%. But what I understand deeply is when you are at a level of experience of suffering that I have experienced, all they want to know is what's going to work. So that's what I want to give. And the rest can come after that. But I'm speaking specifically really to them, and frankly, any provider who is listening and wants to hear what's worked and what does and what doesn't. So let's go through on a body, mind, and soul breakdown. Otherwise, it will get very confusing. So on a physical body level, starting from the top of my body. So to clarify, I was in a full, by the time I was at my peak worst, it was 10 out of 10 pain, full body, 24/7, zero reprieve and break. And this was for years, not just a couple of years. This was for years. Where I started was actually having a sinus situation that was overlapping with a stomach situation. So I'm not fully positive what came first. What I can tell you came first was a lot of trauma. So that's very important to note, that a lot of trauma happened, and that from the get-go, that plants were there for me.
Oh yeah, because that stays in the body. That stays in your body forever.
Yeah, the plants were there for me. So the first thing outside of the incredible nausea that I was having, and it was the migraines. I had actually migraines and headaches. I have had experience with several different kinds. Everything from tension to cluster to aura. For a long time, I was actually no aura, and that they could not understand that at all. But I was dealing with these round the clock. I mean, by the time I got to that, I would say that and the nausea were what hit me with being bedridden. And of course, anybody who's experienced anything with migraines and headaches, which is millions and millions of people every moment, they're often experiencing a huge amount of nausea, whether it be from dizziness, whether it be from the pressure, whatever it is. And not only was I having all these different headaches and migraines at the same time, but this was all around my head. So I wasn't someone who just had a one occipital. I was a bioccipital, which, like, for patients and people who don't know what that means, not super important. All you need to know is that it's more predictable and common for someone to have a localized pain. In other words, right at the temples or right at the back of the head or right at the front of the head. And that's not me. I'm like that 1%. That's all of it. And all of it. I mean, all everywhere, just everywhere. And not being able to just be like, yeah, that's TMJ causing it. Like, no, that's not where we got to go. So I was having a lot of that. And for those who care to understand this, of course, they checked my vision and hearing and everything, right? So like my scans and everything were looking fine. My eyesight and my hearing is actually exceptional to a level that is, like, I don't want to say alarming. I would say they were confused and mystified to see that. And they kind of just left it there. So I have really good vision and I have really good hearing. So I am very sensitive. And so, you know, that definitely impacts it. But I started to get more sensitive to smells, more sensitive to everything. Basically all my clair senses started to activate, which at the time I didn't understand or appreciate that happening. I was just in a space of suffering at that time. I was, again, having all these different sinus issues. So I have asthma. That's another thing on the list. And mostly it's bronchial. So what would happen is I was prone to bronchitis and pneumonia. So basically it was just a constant flow of the change of the seasons that were happening. And also being in New York and global warming, just the changes of the seasons just got more and more and more intense. And it was kind of strange also to be like bedridden. You're almost like kind of like you're almost like in a stasis of seasons. And yet I was still having all of these allergies and all of these different experiences. My whole body physically was in pain. I just had this incredible joint pain, just achiness, sometimes stabbing. The nausea was outrageous. It took us so long to figure out that I have gastroparesis, but doing that was huge. And for anybody who is of the 100,000 rare individuals who are diagnosed with that annually, if you are listening to this, I really, really, really hope that you are doing your research on how much cannabis can help you, because these plants will save your life. Around that, I lost 30 to 40 pounds, which wavered between 30 and 40 pounds very, very, very dangerously quickly. And it was part of how we figured out what was going on. there are people who have gastroparesis who are on feeding tubes and are emaciated. And there's literally no one on this planet that could convince me, actually no one in this universe that can convince me that I am not on that feeding tube. I'm not in the hospital. I am not dying from gastroparesis right now purely because of cannabis. And actually, I have some interesting theories around how psilocybin is also helping with that, which is very confusing because I also can be very sensitive, of course, with my stomach to that. But somehow I have a theory of something that's brewing around that.
No, that's actually very interesting because I also have a lot of theories that kind of like, I think emotions in a way reside in the stomach. Our gut bacteria plays a huge role. And then if we talk about, you know, specifically psilocybin, well, let's start with cannabis. Specifically cannabis, its anti-emetic and anti-nausea properties are like numero uno on the list of reasons it's so beneficial for it coming from cancer patients to those struggling with cachexia or eating disorders. It is so beneficial. So of course, you know, chronic nausea, even if it's a rare condition, I feel could be beneficial. But it's interesting whenever we think about psilocybin because it makes you nauseous whenever you take it, only briefly. But it's that wrestling with emotions, which I believe lives in your stomach, that really could be doing some of the work there as well. So I that's why I'm so interested by plant medicine is the fact that it takes a really a true holistic approach. Like it gets no more holistic inside and out in the way that the healing's done. And I'd love to hear more, Jamie, about how you kind of came to find plant medicine and how you were able to incorporate these into your treatment regime.
I found plant medicine first by, I guess, being told I shouldn't have it, right? You know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Being born in 89 was definitely, you know, older millennial of that absolute DARE era still creeped absolutely in there because DARE parents. I pushed away people for a while who were engaging with cannabis. And then ironically, later on, as I started to get older, even though I was not using any sort of plants or drugs in high school or drinking, like I just wasn't, I was still surrounding myself with people who were heavily involved. But I was seeing such the antithesis of what I embody and what I teach and what I preach. Or what I offer and encourage. And I think in a way, I don't know, it's fascinating that this phrase is coming up. I don't know where this comes from, but it's like I got a window into hell in order to understand what it would be like to find my heaven within cannabis and these plants in general. And what I would, how I would look at different entheogens as well as other chemicals and how they're being used and what I would determine for myself is a drug versus not and what's a spirit and what's not. I think all of that experience played a massive role into how I look at things now, who I am, and how I've taught that, because I basically, unfortunately, watched all of these being so deeply abused and, from my perspective, misused. And I say this not in a judgmental way, but simply in a way by I was watching people I deeply cared about pretty much destroying their lives and allowing it to impact mine. And so that painted a certain narrative, a certain understanding for me of what would be possible. And then when I got into college, it was a little bit of a shift. I was still having to take care of a lot of people, but it was more so that at this point it was different because I was now diving in. Right. So once you're diving in, then you get, you know, even more understanding and more tolerance. But I was not aware that I was using all of these medicinally. Except for alcohol, but I was definitely misusing that spirit. I was just using it for fun.
That's the college experience.
Right. Which is what I always do say, that fun and joy are medicine. However, for me, I know that I was at large doing this kind of just, I wanted to belong and I wanted to, you know, have a place and just kind of, it was different. It's different than, for example, if I sit down with plants and fungi and I set a deep intention in a ritual to bring more joy in my life and to acknowledge where I don't have joy and why I don't have joy in all of these things. You know, it's very different. And then after kind of rather babysitting, a lot of people doing a lot of different entheogens and things, I was like nervous. I just felt afraid to do them. And I also started to build this narrative of, oh, well then I'm going to have to like put my care in people. Like I'm going to have to trust people. And also I'm going to have to be like a burden to people. This was this whole narrative that I was creating. And so I just didn't want to go there until I finally started to, and I started to have different positive experiences with a lot of different things. But it wasn't until I started to get friends trying to intervene with my cannabis use that I started to question the meaning of cannabis in my life. And it wasn't until I was bedridden and then became one of the first 300 legal medical cannabis patients in New York State where I realized there was so much more to this plant. And then it wasn't really until I started to have a spiritual awakening and understanding and connection with the plant as a spirit and all of these fungi, all the plants as the spirits that they are, where I started to really define my connection and my deep respect and trust, admiration, and frankly, devotion to these spirits that I agree we co-evolve, we cohabitate and exist with. And I believe that we are all one, that all energy is the same energy. And so in some way we are them, and they're, you know, versions of ourselves, imprints that we have coming to us in the divine timing that they do when we open ourselves up with that intention. And it's life-saving.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. I think that we can either assign labels like drugs or medicine or what hemp or fiber, whatever the case is, but at the end of the day, it is a plant. And anyone listening to the show knows I very much believe that plants have spirits. And I think that, like you said, there is a certain devotional quality to you that allows you to bring upon that certain sort of healing intention with its use. Because like you mentioned, cannabis, and as well as alcohol, they have their place in certain times as far as like community building. The therapeutic value of joy and fun is absolutely there. But it all comes down to, you know, how you're using it. And we as humans have a weird subconscious penchant to intentionally do stuff that's harmful to us, like, you know, getting drunk every weekend and stuff like that. So even with medicinal cannabis use, we can have a penchant to overdo it. And sometimes it takes your friends and other people to really shake you into understanding why it is you're using it. And at that time, whenever you were using cannabis regularly and were developing your relationship with plant medicine, were you conscious and observing any medicinal benefits in terms of your symptoms or anything going on there?
Yes. So once I was sick, by the time I was sick, that was immediately when I realized I was using cannabis medicinally. I definitely didn't have the clarity that I have now at all, because honestly, my spiritual connection now has hugely helped with my understanding and my connection medicinally. And I wasn't surrounded by that. I was in New York. It was a different time. New York is still very behind California. I mean, it was just like, there was so much that it wasn't being nurtured for me the way that almost the moment that I got here and just sort of asked and invited to be nurtured into it was, you know, I shown all of this. So yeah, I mean, it was a huge shift. I think we're learning a lot right now. The pandemics have given this very interesting new experience for a lot of people. A lot more people are trying plants. For the first time, more people I find are going into plant diets. And I would say that, you know, we've had a lot more information come out. We've had a lot of media look at, you know, the shows, you know, the Netflix specials.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Fantastic Fungi and all these things came out during this time. And people were starting, I've heard of more people growing and asking me about like getting advice for their use of plants and fungi. And people are more focused on the medicinal and spiritual. People that I wouldn't even anticipate would be asking me questions or asking me questions. It's a very exciting time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It is a super, super exciting time because like you said, finally these ideas are presenting themselves for the mass consciousness. And it's nice to see people really grasping on and at least just starting to question things from a real perspective of themselves. Everyone has to kind of understand and come into their own as to how cannabis is helping them medicinally if they're already using. And myself, I had the similar situation where I was using it. And then it's like, now I know enough about myself to recognize what's medicinal use and what's not. And that was the key factor, is that guidance or that spiritual understanding of oneself, which I'm not to say that I do. I know that's a lesson we learn forever. But I would love to hear more about, you know, how transitioning back into using cannabis medicinally, as far as like, you know, your first dispensary experience and becoming one of the first patients in New York. How was that for you?
Well, from the moment that, you know, my mother just like tossed the New York Times onto my bed, she's like, just look at the front page picture. And it's, you know, a huge headline made the front page that they were opening the cannabis program in New York. And I remember being very emotional. I don't usually actually get asked this story a lot, but I remember crying because it was such a necessary need of hope that I couldn't convey. And my parents were very anti-cannabis, and at that time especially still very much not understanding, even though they were watching me with such desperation and I was failing out of everything Western medicine. It's not like that was necessarily the first thing that I ran to solve it. But at a certain point, it became harder and harder for them to ignore that this was an option. And once there were less doctors yelling in all of our ears of like, this is not going to solve this, and I just started to really listen and take it on, the doors started to open. But the issue was that I didn't have the knowledge, and I just didn't have the access to what I really needed in order that was going to really help me and work for me. So I wasn't able to present that right away. In the process of signing up and getting the actual, you know, identification and everything was a pain. It took a long time. Of course, I felt horrible. So, you know, like my mom had to literally help me fill this out because I basically could barely look at screens. I mean, I barely used social media or anything at that time. Like I could really barely do anything. And if I did, it was kind of, you know, through audio or just kind of like hazy eyes and like one thing every once in a while. I just could not do it. It was too painful, too difficult. My vision was blurry. So, and then we had to, you know, wait and wait and wait and wait. And then I finally got it. And it was like the best feeling to get that ID because I was like, this is a new chapter. Like now at minimum, my relationship with my parents and with what's going on with my relationship with cannabis should be able to start to shift by the fact that this is legitimate, but also just a little bit less of a concern and a fear overall legally. And of course, I don't have to worry as much. The reality is, as you know, my siblings of color who are walking the world. And there's still concern to some degree, either way, especially because as a trans person, don't always have the best experience with cops either. So ultimately, going to my first dispensary was one of the more landmark moments, I would say, of my journey with plants. It was traumatic, and it was also critical that I have that experience, because I'm not sure I would have the momentum of passion that I did to start to really help myself and find a way to integrate into this industry and make changes if I didn't have that experience. And basically, I don't like drama, and I have no desire to name names. So I'm going to leave this dispensary out and say that this company does still exist. And I do hope that they've improved. I can't speak to that. But what I will say is I went in to this building, and I felt like I walked into a hospital, except that it was like eerily quiet. Like I don't even remember there being music or just anything. And it was like literally white walls with basically like almost no art, if any. And basically, you know, like, especially because at the time, like everything was hidden behind doors. So it's not like where you could walk, where it's inviting now. And like with most dispensaries, that are, you know, you walk in and there's someone there to welcome you, and there's security, and there, you know, a whole, it's open, you can see the medicine, you know, but you can't see the cannabis at all, or anything. You basically like could hardly see anybody except for like a window that you can like go to speak to as if you were at a hospital. And I sit down, and I eventually am joined by someone who I perceived to be, you know, a mother of this child that I imagined couldn't have been more than maybe six, who I perceived with visually what I was experiencing, that they likely had some form of cancer or something. Also, just because at the time you had to have like four very specific things in order to get it. The way that I was able to get it was through the neuropathy lane, because I was having this really weird neuropathic response, even though that's not what my diagnosis was. and that was the moment that I guess, you know, I was isolated. I wasn't in a hospital all that time, right? Like I was at home. So I didn't realize, it's like, it's kind of a wild experience. Like, it's like, I didn't realize truly how sick I was until that moment, like that moment. And I'm there with this parent that is clearly soul crushed, and this child that doesn't even probably grasp. And I'm sitting here witnessing them and witnessing myself. And we're in this completely unwelcoming space. And it was like, I thought I was going to melt into a puddle there, and I was alone. I had nobody with me. I had absolutely no support, nobody encouraging me, no one holding my hand through. And eventually I get called, and I go to the back of the room, and I'm sitting at a table with this nice person who's sitting there trying to assure me that they know what I'm going through, and that they're here to show me my options, and that there's all this great hope for me. Meanwhile, I am not even staring at a cannabis plant. I am staring at a series of containers that are different colors, red, green, and then I think yellow or blue, I don't know, another color. And basically these were like their strengths, is how they were, like, I think, referring to it at the time. And basically it was like tincture or vaporizer, or pills. And they couldn't answer where this was from, what was in it, Nothing, basically. Nothing. Nothing. So I left paying an obscene amount of money. An obscene amount of money. Even compared to I don't even think I would pay now what I paid then for that. For product that was not what I needed. And I gained nothing from it other than somehow believing this still could help me and feeling I had not the proper support. And compared to when I went to my first dispensary in LA, it is like another universe.
I'd love to hear like how you kind of navigated that in terms of what works best for you, what doesn't work for you, et cetera.
Trial and error, and I made it very public. I did reviews of every product that I could possibly get my hands on to try. I educated myself on what cannabis is and like what are the elements, the components that make up cannabis and what they can do for you, and spoke to more patients and did research on more products and spoke to more companies. And also just checked in with myself and I notated. I wrote, I took, I don't, I'm really not as good about it now as I wish I was. I used to be extremely diligent about writing down the cultivar and how I felt beforehand and what my experience was and did I eat before and like, you know, what were the different things and what were the terpenes in there and things like that. The huge shift for me was when I got a hold of Leaf 411. I'm trying to remember how we got connected. Actually, you know what? Was it Dr. Leia? Or wait, no, maybe they gave me Dr. Leia. I'm trying to remember. One of them possibly introduced me and made me aware of them from the other, or there was some connection. I don't know. But I got a hold of them. And you know, I was like, oh my God, what you're doing is incredible. I want more people to know about you. I want to not let you know when and call anonymously and like do a review so that I can like authentically be able to speak to how amazing this is. And it changed my life because I was so diligent with all of the information I had at the time. What was most helpful for me was a combination that included this incredibly expensive fantastic tincture from Aunt Zelda's. Shout out to Mara Gordon. I worship you. You know that. But I was like, Mara, this is so expensive. And like, she's like, I know, I can't. This is the legal market. You know, and the oil plant is an incredible manufacturer that was, you know, manufacturing it. And it was the 30-to-1 tincture. And it was the first thing that was making a landmark difference with my fibromyalgia pain, which was like the thing. And so I was like, I don't even remember how, but we figured out how together what every component was of that. And then we started to research on all the terpenes and we started to think back, and I started to look back through my pages of all the cultivars I could say that were helpful and not, and we started to match it up. And then we realized, okay, here is what are the cannabinoids and terpenes that I'm missing, and here's what I've got a lot of. And we like I realized that I was being guided to use more THC because of how much pain and nausea I was having. But what I really needed was I was more sensitive to THC. What I needed was more CBD, and I needed very specific terpenes. And I needed all of this in a cycle of like every 2 hours, round the clock, in a very specific way, consistently, and the whole nine yards. And they helped me to figure that out. And once I started to really put that into practice, I was like, I get it now. And then, you know, Kristen started to talk about, you know, how indica sativa and hybrid was not true. And I was like so resistant initially to this because I was so programmed. And then I was like, oh my God, you are so right. And that combination of everything and just trial and error, and you get closer and closer and closer. But you know, what's important to note is that access. So many people don't have that access. And if I didn't have a lot of the support that I did, I wouldn't have had access either. I was gifted a lot of product. I was not paid to review because I wanted to. I told them, I'm going to be really honest. So I'm going to say everything that's amazing and everything that needs work. And I'm not going to be a jerk about it, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say.
Yeah, and that's fair, especially from a patient's perspective.
Yeah, I was like, that's my goal, is to give the truth. Because while I'm helping figure out myself, hopefully this helps people who need to know for their different things. Because I've always believed that, more and more, that every single symptom that I deal with and every diagnosis and all this, it matters for my way of supporting other people. So my way of being able to reach other patients, like, so many people can relate to me. There's basically no type of symptom that someone can mention, almost no symptom someone can mention that I don't have some degree of experience with and have tried at least a couple of things to do something about it. So that became a superpower. It became something that the privilege that I have with my access, I was going to do something about that to benefit people. And that was my way. That was the way that I felt I could do that, to share it the most people. And so I would just review, and then they're on the internet. Some of them unfortunately were taken down and things, because, you know, the internet, that's what they do. They censor, but a lot of it is out there. And I'm grateful to continue to speak out on products that work for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely doing the good work, especially like you said, any symptom out there, you're able to relate to patients from a diverse range of symptoms as well as diseases. So, I mean, it's very nice to be able to provide your insights on what's helped you and what's helped you get through these. I also wanted to ask, during this period, were your healthcare providers on board? I'm sure you had like a team of healthcare providers behind you. Were they supportive of your decision to try plant medicine?
So of course, that was a wide range, as you can imagine, of responses. In New York, especially, very difficult. So, you know, I come this January 1st of 2023, it will be 9 years of me being on this health journey. A lot's happened in that almost decade in New York State. So I'm 33. So, you know, the responses were so varied, because legally they was zero bandwidth for them at that time. Zero bandwidth, basically. Until that program, it was difficult for them, without risking themselves, to be supportive. I was closeted with a lot of them for a long time.
The cannabis closet.
Even therapists. Yep. I tell people all the time that cannabis consumers and patients coming out, of course, it's a different context from like me coming out as queer and things like that, or trans or disabled, but like coming out is coming out. Coming out is a process of something that is taboo or misunderstood, or both, you know, in society, of an experience that is not necessarily seen as something that is largely experienced by people. And it absolutely is, honestly, it doesn't feel different. I honestly don't know that I could explain how my fear of, say, for example, my grandmother knowing that I'm transgender versus my grandmother knowing that I use cannabis and that I'm in the cannabis industry, even though those are two totally different things, my fear is still the same, that she's not gonna love me. So, you know, that something to note for people in thought. And I also like to put that into perspective, because I think it brings a togetherness and an understanding in a new way of a lot of people who probably don't feel like they understand each other. And now, boom, you all just realize you have something huge in common, which is that a lot of us are going through something like that, a coming out. And so Yeah, I hid it from therapists, from doctors for a while. And then when I would talk about it, it was either misunderstood, something that was kind of just pushed aside. I felt the judgment, like the energy was so palpable and uncomfortable. And that didn't obviously make me feel happy about being at the doctor, which I already didn't feel comfortable about, because that's where my dysphoria and my body dysmorphia and my traumas were all brought up there. So it was like not a fun thing, because of course you go to the doctor constantly, you only do that when that's a reminder that you're not well. Finally, I started to get some support. It was more so around, it was kind of like them saying, we acknowledge that we can't go there with you, basically, kind of thing. And so you need to go somewhere else. And like you basically already need to go somewhere else because you need a different barometric pressure situation and all this stuff. And like, we don't know what to do for you. And I had so many providers quit on me, and I fired so many providers because of different treatments and things also just not working. And like, I don't, you know, someone who, you know, you can look at someone who's in their early 20s who's disabled and say they've got, you know, all the time to figure it out. But it's like, who wants to figure that out in their 20s? Everyone's all the elders claiming the 20s is the time of your life. Yeah, not for everybody. You know, it was so much of a coming out process. When I got here, even still now, I still don't have all of my providers fully on board. And the ones who are, they're so funny about it. Like my rheumatologist, I had to teach her what psilocybin was. Let that sink in.
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand the concerns there. Well, that kind of actually leads to my next question. You've alluded to it and how fungi, and in addition to cannabis, how mushrooms have also helped you in this introspective kind of journey of healing. And I'd love to hear about your relationship with them.
It's romantic. My story with fungi has been so powerful, as I hope everyone's is, and at large, what I hear. It's absolutely, fungi has saved my life, and the combination with cannabis and fungi together was something that I was immediately introduced to. I've actually, I don't think ever had psilocybin or even psilocin without cannabis. And they are so powerful together. My goodness, they get along so well. They really bring different things to the table, I think. And it's like one healing party. I just feel so incredibly supported. I find that cannabis really helps me to boost the powers and properties of the psilocybin. And I feel psilocybin also does as well. I think that they're, you know, they have their own entourage effect. I don't know that that's, maybe you would tell me more that that's more, I don't know if that's technically the proper term given that context. I know, also know that you know what I mean when I say that.
Yeah, I would definitely say they work like in concert with one another.
Yes. And I would say there are so many very clear within all of my research of my experience and research in general benefits of the two of them coming together. First of all, that nausea that we've talked about, right? So that nausea is, for me, unfortunately, not usually just a brief thing. I have really gotten good at managing it to the point where I've done over 100 journeys, and I would say that I've maybe had two journeys and that were really challenging for me. And I've only ever thrown up once, albeit it was for hours, but you know, it's at large. I've honed in. And one of the ways that I've done that, I believe entirely, is because I've never not had cannabis. And also I specifically make sure to have CBD. And now I, for many, many months now, I've been using a CBG tincture. And I believe that that massively helps because of the CBG, especially with the gastro properties there. And so actually, I would say that one of the ways that cannabis saves my life is it allows me to engage with other entheogens that save my life because it has me able to manage my nausea much better, which is unique because we live in the Western world. I can't stand it how much there's like, well, you need to take this, but then you have all these symptoms. So you're going to get this to take that to fix the symptoms or that so that you can take that. Why am I okay with this and in love with this? Because it's natural.
And it works sometimes only once.
Correct. So this, it's really a landmark thing. And other things, so boosting each other, right? Also helping with the nausea. So in terms of a spiritual context, my guides refer to it as like, psilocybin is like a phone, like a direct phone line to the other, you know, realms and to other dimensions. Even a small amount of psilocybin can help me activate and expand my clair senses that much more. And so, cannabis for me helps more with which is not to say that psilocybin doesn't. Psilocybin is definitely, I would say, is absolutely a heart opener, a huge heart opener. I would say that the difference is that cannabis, I would say it's the clarity. Like, so with psilocybin, I feel like it depends on how much and the literal experience you're having each time, right? Is like, it's not going to be consistent. Yes, it's unique every time, which can still be unique every time with cannabis, especially if you're setting intention and really doing it with a ritual. However, we can have much more consistency, like fruit slabs, right? Like, so like this package of fruit slabs, I feel confident that in having this pack, like any amount of fruit slabs I have, like all of these ones, like I'm going to have the same experience with them. Could I have a different experience with setting a different intention and different experiences of people and all these different things the way with psilocybin? Yes. However, the medicinal value of 10 milligrams per piece, I know what 10 milligrams feels like for me. I know that what it's going to taste like. I know that like that's all tested. It's all going to be the same. What am I holding right now? Golden Teachers. sorry, I had to think for a second. Same batch. Can't promise that every time, even weighing it, that if I have 0.3 and 0.3 and 0.3, even if I'm sitting in the same chair, even if I had 0.3 on this conversation, and we repeat this conversation, and I have 0.3, it will still be different. I would in fact promise you that I would have zero certainty of what your experience would be, or what my experience, well, both of our experiences would be ultimately. And that's scary to people, understandably. What I think it does is it simply enhances the difference of what a difference that these spirits are wanting and medicines are wanting to convey, which is with cannabis, you have so much control. Like if you don't want to surrender to cannabis, you don't have to. You don't have to. You can have one puff. You could even have a whole blunt to the face. But if you tell the cannabis spirit, like, I'm not going to listen to I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to ignore your advice. It's pretty easy to do. I mean, perhaps not as easy to ignore sort of like munchies, but like in terms of the emotional and psychological aspects, Whereas with psilocybin, good luck to you, my friend. If you do not surrender, you are in for quite a ride. Resistance is going to really mark your experience, whether you've had 0.3 or you've had 6 grams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, they come together in powerful ways we're discovering all the time. I think we're very early.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it sounds to me like mushrooms and other entheogens like that have really helped you along this healing journey, and almost this journey of like self-discovery. And I think that's one thing that I find is very, very powerful whenever we talk about psilocybin mushrooms or even other entheogens or psychedelics or plant medicines, is they provide this sort of fresh eye, new perspective on the same thing. You're still you entering that journey. However, you're viewing your own thoughts and feelings and even your memories to some degree. And I think that lets us really understand ourselves and journey deeper than we can don't get me wrong, deep meditation can do the same thing. Them together, oh, that's the moneymaker. Those two together, that's the bread and butter. But entheogens help facilitate these deep introspective journeys where you really understand yourself on a level you may not have understood yourself before. And I think that is not only a key to healing, but also a key to finding our place in this confusing, complex, chaotic universe. And if you don't mind me asking, one thing I would love to know is how these entheogens helped you during your gender transition, because I feel that that in itself is a psychedelic transformative experience.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, they're still helping. So I'll give you a direct example of how they're still even helping now, which is that I have been having this fascinating hesitation with psilocybin right now. And I am 1000% convinced that this is because there's a lot of things that I'm afraid to see right now that I am specifically healing right now. And I'm intentionally and consciously healing these things. And I know that it's going to give the unlock. And there's parts of myself that are fighting into this. And that's even that awareness of that resistance is me getting a reminder of how helpful it is, because I know that when I feel ready and I sit down to do my ceremony and I have that it will be an incredibly special thing for me. What I would say is with my transition, the first moment in my life that I ever felt not dysphoric, no body dysmorphia, that I felt one with the world and I felt at peace, was when I was given 0.3 of psilocybin and a joint. And I was told, like, go sit out, you know, in this beautiful garden, you know, the dogs. And it was, I will never forget. I am so beyond grateful that that was facilitated as a possibility for me, and that I was ready to be open to that in the moment that I received it, because I needed it so badly. And I'm very happy that there's a picture that exists online. it can be found. It would be challenging for me to find it now, but it's definitely like on social media, it's on Facebook and stuff. It's not stated, but you can look for it. There's a particular picture where my head, I'm standing there kind of in the sun, and my head is next to this bird feeder, this little birdhouse. And you can simply look at me and experience my euphoria. And there's something about looking at me in that image that, without me telling people, that that was the first time that I ever experienced psilocybin. And that in that moment of that picture, I was experiencing that awareness for the first time that I'm expressing to you now, of this feeling at one with everything, and not feeling pain and not feeling the suffering on a body, mind, and soul level for the first time on such a small amount. I mean, people look at that picture and they just see something in me, and they say, like, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's just like, you just seem so at bliss or peace, and it's palpable. And you can sell all you, I mean, now, especially that I've said that, you'll notice because like my pupils are a little bit dilated, of course. But it's when I look at that picture, it's an emotional experience that brings me back to this incredible gratitude of what's possible when we share our stories, when we share our access. The fact that, like I do think about the lives that were lost of the humans that needed to do their own trial and error of which of these are poisonous mushrooms and which of these are toxic mushrooms that are not truly poisonous to a degree. It took so much for us to get here. In modern times, yes, but even before that, for, to get to this point of understanding and how much we lost and forgot and fought and all of what we're pulling ourselves back out of. I personally feel that we need to be turning to a deeper respect and raising of the platform of Indigenous peoples, and making sure that we are holding all the space and facilitating and supporting and putting resources into their sharing of their wisdom and preserving of their wisdom and their knowledge of what they want to share and what they feel comfortable sharing. And I think that preservation and all of that is a huge part of also correcting a lot of decisions that we've made. And what it looks like to go forward in a way that is both honoring the people, the plants, and what's possible when we can come together, because we can't come together without doing that. And I think that's we're at a fine line right now.
Yeah, well said. And I think that this, this quote unquote psychedelic renaissance is definitely reminding all of us of the great travesties and injustices that many cultures have endured over all the past centuries. Now, I definitely want to be mindful of your time, Jamie, but what I'd love to hear more about is the fact that you're an intuitive chef and kind of how what your work entails and where people can find you.
Thank you. Yes. So being an intuitive chef, my cooking journey started when I was 10. But I would say that being aware and calling myself an intuitive chef started in the pandemic. My health journey made it so that I had to stop cooking for 7 years, but I did go for a stint to culinary school when I was 14. That was when I first got into professional kitchens, and I just loved, loved, loved the culinary industry. I loved nurturing people, loved the connection, the celebration, what would happen around the table, and the actual creative nature of working within Gaia. And then eventually it started to become something that was really a new spiritual meaning and understanding for me. And I started up a new cooking show because I had one in college, but then I started a new one called The Trannabis Kitchen, where I'm ending the stigma of cannabis as well as ending the fear of cooking with cannabis and cooking in general, and by making it fun. And I've done 2 seasons of interviewing people and cooking with them and having them share their stories. For me, cooking intuitively with cannabis is really bringing the spiritual lens and overlap with cannabis and cooking. And it really is a very healthy, a very fun, and a really powerful way to integrate cannabis into our day-to-day life. And I believe that intuitive cooking with cannabis is a really critical possibility of an avenue of something that can help propel forward the at-large missions within healing with cannabis and with cannabis in general, because we're humans. We all need to eat. People already love to cook. People already know about cooking and food. And, when we talk about the demographics that are growing at large, the senior community, we're talking about a community that is at large interested in edibles. And I think that the more that we get into a more and more and more health conscious world, we're gonna, I love smoking this plant. I also think that we are going to get to a point where we're doing that less, even though right now the trends are actually showing upwards, apparently. with smoking, I think that will time out at a certain point. There's going to be a very big shift. And I think that edibles have a place to play. And I think that there's so much excitement. Cannabis is my favorite ingredient to cook with because there's so much you can do, and it just brings the medicine and play of food to a whole new level. And so I love to bring that into people's lives and support them. And I look forward to the new iteration of what will happen for the Cannabis Kitchen coming forward. People can find me all across social media at large right now and blasted around the Cannabis Chi platform. So any of your favorite platforms, just look for Cannabis Chi. You can look for Cannabis, the Cannabis Kitchen, or Chef Cannabis, all places, Cannabis Lifestyle, if you're an Instagram person. Most active right now on LinkedIn. I'm getting a little bit more active on TikTok, so you can find me, and I'm honored to serve and support you and answer any questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jamie, for joining the podcast today and sharing your story of how plants have helped you. I mean, that's really inspiring, and it's a vulnerable story, so I really appreciate sharing it. I know that even if it just touches one person, you know, that's all that matters. So we're able to really help out those who are curious. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story, Jamie.
Thank you for holding the space. It's an honor, and I'll see you all soon. Namaste.
All right, everyone, that's all we have for this week. I appreciate listening to this episode, and I want to wish you all a happy new year. You can find Jamie online at cannabischi.com or through his miscellaneous social media, which are going to be located down in the show notes. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to send it off to someone else who you know would enjoy it. Additionally, we'd be eternally grateful if you were to rate us 5 stars and follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. For questions, comments, and community, head over to our official Instagram at plantsavemylife.pod. Until next time, everyone, have a beautiful week.